So, Hare Krishna, everybody. So today's Good Friday, and for me it's certainly very good, so I can be with all of you today. And actually the verse we're discussing today is from the 10th canto, 3rd chapter, verses 1 to 5. And this is the chapter that actually describes the birth of Lord Krishna. So I'll just start with reading the translation, because we're doing the five verses altogether. The translation's fairly long, and so is the purport. So I'm going to be with the purport a little bit selective about what I read, unless you'd like me to read the whole thing, but it's about 2.5 pages. So I'll start with the English, and then we'll move on to the Sanskrit. Thereafter, at the auspicious time for the appearance of the Lord, the entire universe was surcharged with all the qualities of goodness, beauty, and peace. The constellation Rohini appeared, as did stars like Ashwini. The sun, the moon, and the other stars and planets were very peaceful. All directions appeared extremely pleasing, and the beautiful stars twinkled in the cloudless sky. Decorated with towns, villages, mines, and pasturing grounds, the earth seemed all auspicious. The rivers flowed with clear water, and the lakes and vast reservoirs full of lilies and lotuses were extraordinarily beautiful. In the trees and green plants, full of flowers and leaves, pleasing to the eyes, birds like cuckoos and swarms of bees began chanting with sweet voices for the sake of the demigods. A pure breeze began to blow, pleasing the sense of touch and bearing the aroma of flowers. And when the Brahmins, engaging in ritualistic ceremonies, ignited their fires according to Vedic principles, the fires burned steadily, undisturbed by the breeze. Thus, when the birthless Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was about to appear, the saints and Brahmins, who had always been disturbed by demons like Gans and his men, felt peace within the core of their hearts, and kettle drums simultaneously vibrated from the upper planetary systems. So we'll just recite the fifth verse. Shall we? I mean, it's a very long translation. Should we repeat? No? Okay. So, thereafter, at the auspicious time for the appearance of the Lord, the entire universe was surcharged with all the qualities of goodness, beauty, and peace. The constellation Rohini appeared, as did stars like Ashwini. The sun, the moon, and the other stars and planets were very peaceful. All directions appeared extremely pleasing, and the beautiful stars twinkled in the cloudless sky. Decorated with towns, villages, mines, and pasturing grounds, the earth seemed all auspicious. The rivers flowed with clear water, and the lakes and vast reservoirs full of lilies and lotuses were extraordinarily beautiful. In the trees and green plants full of flowers and leaves, pleasing to the eyes, birds like cuckoos and swarms of bees began chanting with sweet voices for the sake of the demigods. A pure breeze began to blow, pleasing the sense of touch and bearing the aroma of flowers. And when the Brahmins, engaging in ritualistic ceremonies, ignited their fires according to Vedic principles, the fires burned steadily, undisturbed by the breeze. Thus, when the birthless Lord Vishnu, Supreme Personality of Godhead, was about to appear, the saints and Brahmins, who had always been disturbed by demons like Gans and his men, felt peace within the core of their hearts, and kettle drums simultaneously vibrated from the upper planetary systems. So I'm going to read just the first three paragraphs of the purport, and I'll come back to the last paragraph later on. So Srila Prabhupada says, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that his appearance, birth, and activities are all transcendental, and that one who factually understands them is immediately eligible to be transferred to the spiritual world. The Lord's appearance or birth is not like that of an ordinary man who is forced to accept a material body according to his past deeds. The Lord's appearance is explained in the previous chapter. He appears out of his own sweet pleasure. When the time was mature for the appearance of the Lord, the constellations became very auspicious. The astrological influence of the constellation known as Rohini was also predominant because this constellation is considered very auspicious. Rohini is under the direct supervision of Brahma, who is born of Vishnu, and it appears at the birth of Lord Vishnu, who is in fact birthless. According to the astrological conclusion, besides the proper situation of the stars, there are auspicious and inauspicious moments due to the different situations of the different planetary systems. At the time of Krishna's birth, the planetary systems were automatically adjusted so that everything became auspicious. At that time, in all directions, east, west, south, north, everywhere, there was an atmosphere of peace and prosperity. Auspicious stars were visible in the sky, and on the surface in all towns and villages or pasturing grounds, and within the mind of everyone, there were signs of good fortune. The rivers were flowing, full of water, and the lakes were beautifully decorated with lotus flowers. The forests were full with beautiful birds and peacocks. All the birds within the forests began to sing with sweet voices, and the peacocks began to dance with their consorts. The wind blew very pleasantly, carrying the aroma of different flowers, and the sensation of bodily touch was very pleasing. At home, the Brahmins, who were very accustomed to offering sacrifices in the fire, found their homes very pleasant for offerings. Because of disturbances created by the demonic kings, the sacrificial fire had been almost stopped in the houses of Brahmins, but now they could find the opportunity to start the fire peacefully. Being forbidden to offer sacrifices, the Brahmins were very distressed in mind, intelligence, and activities. But just on the point of Krishna's appearance, automatically their minds became full of joy because they could hear loud vibrations in the sky of transcendental sounds proclaiming the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militamina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Padati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yata Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Sha Shri Rupam Sakrachatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrinda Vineshwari Vishabhano Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Pancha Kalpataru Vyascha Vipasindhubhevacha Aditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
So the appearance of the Lord is very prominent this week. We had Gaura Purnima on Wednesday, and today we're now discussing these verses, and it feels like Janmashtami about 5 months in advance to me, anyway, when I was, preparing for this class. Like, yeah, it's like Janmashtami. So I want to go back to actually a point Prabhupada makes in the purport, how in chapter 4 of the Bhagavad Gita, in verses 8 and 9, Krishna is explaining to Arjun why he appears, and he gives three principal reasons. Prabhupada has explained that actually Krishna appears for his own sweet pleasure, but the reasons Krishna gives to Arjun is that he comes to annihilate the demons, to please the devotees, and to reestablish religious principles. And he explains that when we understand the transcendental nature of his appearance and activities, that actually assures us a place with him. We no longer have to come back here. So when I was, preparing this verse and reading it, for years and years I've been hearing this term, the understanding the transcendental nature of his activities and his appearance. What does transcendental mean? And what does it mean to understand how transcendental his activities and appearance are? Now, one of the things, one of the services I do is university preaching, and we have this section, this talk that we do with the university students to establish, how do you establish who God is? And one of the points, you know, there's seven things we look for, and one of the points is that he has supernatural or transcendental activities, that they cannot be repeated by anyone else. Actually, these five verses I found really shed light on what it means for activities to be transcendental. And I want to come back to that in a moment, because what I wanted to focus on is actually that this appearance of Krishna, you know, in the purports to verses 8 and 9 in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, Prabhupada explains that Krishna comes at a very specific and particular time in Brahma's day to do these things, and various incarnations come at particular times, and there are so many different types of incarnations. But actually, if you look at it, within our community, Krishna is appearing and disappearing constantly through our various aartis and our festivals, and also within our consciousness, Krishna also appears and disappears. Actually, we understand he never actually appears and disappears, he's always there. But for various reasons, perhaps in the beginning, when we're still sadhakas, when we're still unsteady bhajan kriya, when we're still getting to grips with the process, Krishna's appearance and disappearance is very much dependent on our qualification. And then as the devotee becomes more advanced, we hear and we read that actually Krishna's appearance and disappearance is his game. And he plays with his devotee. Doesn't matter which ras or relationship you have with him, he appears and he disappears, just like he does during the ras lila. He appears, he disappears, to increase the hankering, to increase the pleasure. And I was just, you know, reflecting on that, actually, these three reasons then, to annihilate the demons, to reestablish religious principles, and to please the devotees, they're not just there at the time when Krishna's, they don't just apply when Krishna appears as, you know, in his various avatars, but they actually apply to us moment to moment. Because, you know, in the Bhagavatam, in the 11th canto, explains that in Kali Yuga, the demons no longer reside in separate places to devotees. We understand previously they initially lived in different planetary systems. Then they moved onto the same planet, then into the same country, then the same cities. But in Kali Yuga, they reside, you know, the demon and the demoniac and divine resides within the individual. So actually, as Krishna appears and disappears in our lives, or how much we allow him to appear and disappear from our lives, actually fulfills these three purposes every moment. So within us, his appearance, through our practice of our nine processes of devotional service, when he appears, whether we're accepting his appearance through Shravanam, or accepting his appearance through Kirtanam, or through Smaranam, or any of the other nine processes, what we find is his presence, or even the knowledge of his presence, he's about to come, destroys the demons in our heart, the demons in our mind. Also reestablishes religious principles, reestablishes what is the way to connect with him. And of course, very, very pleasing to the heart. I think there probably isn't anyone here who can't say that when they come into a kirtan and they're together with devotees and they hear his sweet name melodiously with the devotees, actually whatever issues they have outside of the temple room all get put aside. And you forget about it. The mind becomes peaceful. The heart becomes satisfied and happy. And we dance. Even the ones who can't dance, well, dance. So, you know, this threefold purpose that Krishna comes for, destroying the demons, to establish religious principles, and to please us, go on all the time. You know, when Krishna appeared, actually not everybody was at this point that actually Krishna can be present and not be seen. His appearance isn't always accepted or seen or revealed. Is there also, whilst he was here, there were so many individuals who were here on the planet when Krishna appeared, but not everybody got to see him for who he was. You know, one example that really stands out to me is, of course, we have Gans, who, because of his animosity, couldn't see who Krishna was. But we also have Duryodhan. Just before the Pandavas went to battle, Krishna made one last attempt to persuade Duryodhan, please don't let it go to war. Just give them something. And he actually, even in the Mahabharata, explains that actually Krishna also displayed a partial manifestation of his universal form. And Bhishma Dev was able to see this and revel in it and experience great joy, because he didn't have the Duryodhan of his mind present. He was free of false ego and great love and affection for Krishna. But Duryodhan looked at Krishna and said, look at him, he's trying to persuade me with magic tricks. And actually, if you read this verse, if Duryodhan had read these verses, I think maybe he would have realized, just like the demons of our mind, actually, that Krishna doesn't just perform magic tricks. What's described in the purport and these verses is beyond magic tricks. And you know, one of the things for us, you know, this Duryodhan of our mind, what are the things that stop us from allowing Krishna in, whether it's we're actually hearing but not hearing attentively, or we're reading but we're spaced out and reading through the page, or we are remembering but that remembering is flickering, or any of the other processes. What is it that when Krishna's there, he disappears quickly? You know, our attentiveness only lasts for so long, our connection only lasts. What is it that usually blocks us? Anybody want to? What's the usual things that get in the way? In what form? Maya, yes, Maya. Maya's a big term. Maya has many weapons in her artillery.
So is it that our mind kicks in and so do our senses, and so our senses lead us away from, or it distracts the mind from remembering that we're actually spirit souls?
Okay, so we're distracted by our senses and our mind, yes?
Doubts.
Yes, okay, so doubts. So there are things that distract us. Ladies, anything you want to add on? Yes, Mataji?
Desires.
Okay, so desires, doubts, distractions. And actually, you know, Prabhupada often explains that many of our desires, everything we're driven by, or everything we're driven to achieve here, is based on this quality of wanting to acquire happiness. But he describes material happiness as actually being an absence of misery. You know, we don't feel pleasure from food unless we're hungry. We don't feel pleasure from rest unless we're tired, right? If you woke up fully refreshed and said, no, you must go back to sleep. Sleep will feel like an enemy. If I forced you to eat more prasadam when you're already full, that prasadam will feel, oh my God, why are you punishing me, Chithi Shakti? You know, it's I'm too full. This is going to be painful. So Prabhupada explains that these attachments or these this idea of happiness material is actually based on an absence of misery. But if you really look at it even closer, many of our doubts, our distractions, our attachments and desires, they're very much based on fear. Even after we hear so much of the philosophy, you know, we understand the 10th offenses, still continuing to have material attachments despite hearing so much. Even after hearing so much, why do we maintain it? Because of fear. We fear losing things. We fear that we're not going to gain something. And actually, this is a very mental or material consciousness. Material consciousness comes from the mind. It doesn't come from us. Okay, in our heart of hearts, who we are, we actually, at the very core of ourselves, all we want to do is love and serve and be loved. But the mind wants to do all of the, yeah, you're scared. No, don't do that. Don't surrender to love. Don't be free. Why do you want to be free for? You want to be independent and you want to be unconditionally loved? Well, yeah, but what if he doesn't follow through? What if it's all made up? You know, actually, just make sure you have enough money, and then make sure you have somewhere good to live, and make sure this person doesn't treat you badly, and that person, and make sure everybody knows what a great devotee you are. And you know, all of these things we do to protect ourselves, because we're scared that if they're removed, then we will be vulnerable. But actually, when they're removed, we're vulnerable to be protected and rescued, right? When are we rescued? We're rescued when we're vulnerable. If we're not vulnerable, who's going to rescue us? Right? This is, you know, Krishna saying, okay, come on, stop taking shelter of Maya. When you stop taking shelter of Maya, I'll come and rescue you. I'll embrace you. I'll be there. I will tuck you into my heart. So a lot of our attachments, distractions, doubts, they're based on fear. What's the best way to annihilate fear? Because the biggest trick of fear is that if you hold on to me, you'll be safe. Right? Whether it's fear of a spider or heights, your fear tells you, yeah, hold on to me. Because if you don't hold on to me, that spider, he'll get you. If you don't hold on to me, if you climb up high, you will fall and you'll get hurt. So what is the best way? It's irrational. So what's the best way to annihilate fear?
Just
Faith, okay. What's a prerequisite to faith? We don't can't just blindly have faith. Yes, but before faith, what do we need? Before faith. Realization. Before realization. Knowledge. Sadhusanga. Yes, Prabhu. You don't want to say anything? Okay. So, yes, we need faith. Both of you, absolutely we need faith. But our faith, Krishna talks about how, he tells Arjuna, come to me with faith and knowledge. Because otherwise faith is blind. And faith, blind faith doesn't last, right? We see all the world over, there are so many people who claim to be spiritual or religious or very staunch devotees of whatever faith. But you ask them about their faith, you ask them about their process. Well, my mum told me to, or my grandparents taught me to do this, you know, or actually I walked away. People walk away out of blind doubt as well. So it's very weak, it's very whimsical, it has nothing to stand on. But this, when this faith is coupled with knowledge, then that faith becomes strong, turns into realization and experience. So what is the best way to annihilate fear? Is actually, fear is irrational. So you find the rational. Actually, understanding how Krishna's activities are transcendental and how we can invite that transcendental level of activity into our lives makes us fearless. Because the very things we fear, we always hear actually, the very things we fear, Krishna can get rid of like this. But how much do we allow ourselves to directly experience that Krishna can get rid of it like this? Okay, so this is where I want to come back to this verse. I'm just going to find my notes because I've made them on this. So if you could please give me a moment. Here we go. So I want to come back to the second paragraph. I'm just going to read a little bit of it. At the time of Krishna's birth, the planetary systems were automatically adjusted so that everything became auspicious. Now, you know, amongst, actually probably I would say it's getting more popular maybe the world over, but amongst the devotee community, we do take shelter of astrology, right? We take a shelter of astrology kind of like a weather map. And if we know it's going to rain, then you take your umbrella. Not that it doesn't mean just because it's going to rain in your life, you have to get wet. You just take an umbrella with you, you know? So when we take shelter of astrology like this, then it can be helpful. Because, you know, as Brits, we're obsessed with wanting to know what the weather is. Every day we hang on to a hope someone's going to tell us it's going to be sunny, right? But we just hear about more rain. So we take shelter of astrology, but here, actually, you know, and you know, when we take engage in the Garbhadhan Sanskar, when we get married, when we do so many things, we look for an auspicious time to do it. We're trying to align ourselves. Shri Radha Gokul Nandji Jai Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai. We look for an auspicious time. We try to align ourselves with the stars. Okay, stars are favorable. The weather's good. Astrological weather's good. Let's do this because then it will work out, right? We do this for everything, for many things. And what it's explaining here is actually Krishna's so transcendental, the planets move for him. Okay, he doesn't have to move for the planet. Rohini moves for his appearance. Okay, the planets go to a different. Otherwise, the planets have to do their duty, right? We understand like Shani. My parents are astrologers, so I know a little bit. Shani or Saturn moves every like 2.5 years. Jupiter moves every year. The sun can move every month. So, you know, they have their obligation as to how often they should move. How often they can move. And then they have these various houses that they have to cycle through. But actually, when Krishna appears, oh, okay, abandon all duties of where you have to move. Krishna's appearing. Let's move to facilitate this. So actually, you know, and I've heard this many times over the years that some astrologers won't even read the charts of devotees or do palmistry for devotees because they say once you take shelter of Krishna, actually everything changes. Even Prabhupada, he said, you know, every time you put your hands together in front of the deities, the lines on your hands change. Okay, and this isn't just simply karma changing. This is also Krishna loves us. He will do everything he can possibly do to help us to come closer to him. And sometimes it means cranking up the heat according to our karma, and sometimes it means turning it down. But whatever he's doing, the minute we take shelter, he is, you know, he can move the astrological planets. Doesn't matter if they're obliged to be there or not, according to their dharma. He can say, okay, look, this is my devotee, shift over. Okay?
Auspicious stars were visible in the sky and on the surface in all towns and villages or pasturing grounds. And within the mind of everyone, there were signs of good fortune. The mind is a troublesome thing. It's always hankering for something to latch onto. Okay, it always needs to be preoccupied. Whether you're trying to fall asleep or whether you're asleep or awake, there's always something going on. Even when we're asleep, there's something going on. The mind wants to be busy, 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 busy. Right? So it makes us agitated. Okay, and you know, we talked earlier about this point of fear. Fear being the root cause. Actually, if you look at envy, lust, greed, attachment, madness, illusion, all of these things, at the root of them, they have fear. Even greed, it's a fear of not having enough. Because we don't understand there's more than we could even possibly do with it. So Krishna's appearance, when we invite Krishna into our life, when we allow him in, actually makes our mind peaceful. If we relate this to, for example, our chanting, it's these very things, these hankerings or these impressions in the mind that distract us from the chanting. But the minute we make ourselves attentive to the chanting, the minute we turn to Krishna and say, oh, I called you, here you are, let me look at you, let me experience your presence. Because, you know, Krishna's appearance just isn't, it's not just about his physical appearance, through his name, through his qualities, through his pastimes. He's also fully manifesting and fully appearing. It makes the mind very, very peaceful. So, you know, I work as a consultant psychiatrist, and in my clinics, you know, we see, whether it's inpatients or outpatients, we very, very tangibly, real life, upfront see that even when the mind is at its most disturbed, that when we engage with sound, that are Krishna, activities that are to do with Krishna, values that are to do with Krishna, actually makes the mind peaceful. You know, I have very clear case studies, experience of this on a regular basis, that even our most psychotic patients, when they're exposed to mantra, particularly in the form of kirtan, more so than japa, because japa can, you know, it cleans the dust, and they see their dust even more, can make them a little bit more disturbed. But especially in the form of kirtan, actually makes them very peaceful. We have less use of diazepam, valium, lorazepam, all of these things in our clinic because sound vibration is calming the mind. Now, this doesn't mean I throw away all the other treatments in the dustbin. The mind is also there, has a biological aspect and a social and a psychological. So we have to be balanced. But it's just this appearance of Krishna is so powerful. And to the degree we engage with his presence, to that degree we can also, it doesn't matter how debilitated our mind is or how strong our mind is, Krishna can overcome it very, very quickly. Being forbidden to offer sacrifices, the Brahmins were very distressed in mind, intelligence, and activities. But just on the point of Krishna's appearance, automatically their minds became full of joy because they could hear loud vibrations in the sky of transcendental sounds proclaiming the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we do this many times a day in the temple, and perhaps we do this at home. We blow our conch. We invite Krishna. We announce his appearance. Who feels great pleasure when they hear the conch? Right? You hear the conch, you feel like, oh, arti time, oh, Krishna's here, you know? Even if you've forgotten about him in that moment, when you hear the conch, you remember, oh, Krishna. Okay? So very, very, this, even the idea, the understanding, oh, he's about to come, or he's here, he's about to arrive, it's very, very powerful, this sound. There's a reason we use the conch, to invite him and to announce, here comes our Lord. On the occasion of Lord Krishna's birth, seasonal changes took place throughout the entire universe. Krishna was born during the month of September, yet it appeared like springtime. The atmosphere, however, was very cool, although not chilly, and the rivers and reservoirs appeared just as they would in Sharat, the fall. Lilies and lotuses blossomed during the day, but although Krishna appeared at 12 o'clock midnight, the lilies and lotuses were in bloom, and thus the wind blowing at the time was full of fragrance. To me, when I read those few sentences, I thought, wow, transcendental means actually the impossible becomes possible. Flowers bloom at midnight, seasons change, time of year. This is Krishna, the impossible becomes possible. And you know, in many ways we have an impossible task because the time at which we are on this planet is, there's a lot going on. You watch the news and pretty much every other day, for years, pretty much every day there's bad news, but especially in the last few years, there are things which are threatening to a point of beyond reason,
You know, often when you hear the news and you hear of natural calamities and you hear of attacks or killings, you can kind of understand, okay, I can understand why this person did this or which realm they might perform their activities in. So I can keep myself safe by not going there. I won't stay out late. I won't go down alleyways. I won't go to this place. You know, I'll make sure I meet people I haven't met for the first time in public places. All of these things, we kind of put practical things into our mind but to keep us safe. But the things that are happening now, people are willing to sacrifice their lives to hurt other people. How do you keep yourself safe from that? It's instilling a lot of fear. You know, so to practice devotional service and also spread devotional service in an atmosphere where everybody is quite mistrusting of God and representatives of God is an impossible task. But by taking shelter of Krishna, by allowing him to be the facilitator, not worry so much about what we're doing. We make the endeavor, but we leave the result up to him. The impossible becomes possible. I mean, if seasons can change time, if flowers can bloom when they're supposed to be resting, then we can also, you know, do what actually Lord Chaitanya's appearance did, is invite in and facilitate and be part of this mini golden age. You know, we've often heard that actually when prior to a golden age or when a golden age is starting, there's always purification. There is always cleansing. There is always calamity. Why? Because the inauspicious and the unhealthy has to be purged. That happens in our body. When there's a disease process, the disease process is there actually to repair and heal. But there are symptoms in the body and the mind. There are purging of things. If you eat something unhealthy, you purge it, right? Top and bottom end, you'll purge it. Why? Because your body wants to get rid of it. It's not pleasant. Nobody likes it, but okay, good. Actually, my body needs to get rid of this unpleasant thing. So actually for us, we shouldn't be so disturbed and so not so fearful, because these are orchestrated by man, what's going on. What Krishna is orchestrating when we're taking shelter of him can override anything that anyone else is trying to do. And also this idea of time. Now, it says here that, you know, time wasn't even behaving as it should. Krishna is time. He says this in the Gita, that he is time. And, you know, one of the things that attracted me to Krishna consciousness, there were lots of things, but this one really, it was such a nice point. I remember hearing a sophistry many, many, many years ago that, you know, we hear about the different relationships with God, awe and reverence, fear, dutiful, and we hear about love and surrender. But the highest is actually when we fall in love with Krishna, he surrenders to us. He serves us. Wow. The most powerful person in all of creation serves us. That's amazing. And actually, as time, also time, you know, I often reflect on time bends for devotees. When we engage and are present with Krishna fully, time acts very, very differently. Time acts very differently in our waking state, on our bodily cells. And devotees generally tend to look younger, at least 10 years younger than they should for their age. And that's across the board. That's not just based on your genetics. I just generally find that. We 24 hours feels like so much more when we are fully in Krishna's presence, or to the degree that we're in Krishna's presence. Yes? And even sleep time. Our sleep time becomes a stage or a place for us to engage in transcendental activity, not just follow the whims and the urges of the mind. Yeah, so even sleep, so time, even time behaves differently when we accept Krishna more fully in our lives. For me, this, you know, when I was preparing for, you know, looking at these five verses more in depth, there were two places we could have gone with it. We could have gone into Leela and lots of pastimes and how pleasing Krishna's pastimes are. But the reason I guess I went down the other way, the more philosophical way, is because sometimes we, in the beginning especially, we hear Krishna's pastimes and they are so sweet and so nectarian and so unusual that they automatically attract the heart. But then the mind and false ego kind of come with their doubts. And, you know, the mind has a tendency to say, oh, you've heard that pastime before. You know, maybe don't need to go to that class, or maybe skip that chapter because you've heard it before. You know what happens. But Krishna's pastimes are not about knowing what happens. In fact, you may factually make mistakes, but actually Krishna's pastimes are about relishing them in the heart understanding that Krishna is a person, he's not just an abstract philosophical concept, but when we understand the transcendental nature of his, supernatural nature of his activities, they really aren't repeatable. You know, you don't have to be super strong to lift Govardhan Hill on your little finger. Actually, what lifts Govardhan Hill, allows Krishna to lift Govardhan Hill on his little finger when he's 6-7 years old, of his left hand, is his love for his devotees. Krishna is the ultimate manifestation of love. Who is Krishna? Krishna is the perfect relationship. And we are all trying to seek that perfect relationship here. We seek it in so many places and we're so disappointed. But when we understand, actually, really, my gosh, if I look at Krishna's pastimes, they are amazing. They're not just nice stories about a cute blue boy with chubby cheeks. You know, they're amazing. Then we can more fully appreciate, we can make the mind peaceful, because one of our processes, you spiritualize the intelligence and the mind becomes peaceful. So this is a process of spiritualizing intelligence, actually understanding what is it that we're reading, scrutinizing it, not just enjoying it for entertainment. Does that make sense? So thank you very much. I don't want to go so over, so if we can open up for comments or questions.